Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the ABCs, Authors Between the Covers. What makes successful authors tick? What does it take to sell that manuscript? Is self-publishing a good option? Or is selling your book to a big publishing house still the only way to fly? What about keeping up with your first big success? We'll talk about all this and more on today's show, hosted by journalist and publisher Hope Katz Gibbs, author of Truly Amazing Women Who Are Changing the World, and PR Rules, The Playbook. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs. We're here today with Barbara Shapiro, author of the critically acclaimed bestseller, The Art Forger, a twisty tale of the largest unsolved art theft in history of paintings from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in 1990. We're here today talking to Barbara about this amazing book that she wrote, which was pretty far into her career, so we're going to talk about what it took to stay the distance, stay the course all these years, how it feels to finally have a huge bestseller, and what it's like now that she's hit the big time. So, Barbara, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you. It's my pleasure, Hope.
So tell us about this book.
Well, I still can't believe that this is actually happening. I had published 5 previous novels, none of which went anywhere, did anything, and wrote another 3 that didn't even get published. And now suddenly not only did I get this one published, but it's a bestseller. It's just amazing to me to see the book in airports and see people reading it on the streets, and I can't believe that this has actually happened to me.
Oh, isn't that amazing? So tell us about the book, The Art Forger. How did you come up with this story?
Well, I'm sure you've heard the adage that you're supposed to write what you know, but this is my 10th novel, and I ran out of things I know about 9.5 ago. So I had to come up with the new way of writing books. And so what I do is I write what I'm interested in learning, what I want to know rather than what I already know. And I was interested in Isabella Stewart Gardner herself, who was this fabulous, fabulous woman who lived in the late 19th century. I was interested in the art heist that happened at her museum. As you said, the largest actually solved or unsolved art theft in history. I was very interested in art forgery and how it worked and the people who did it and how they did it and why they did it and what happened to them when they got caught or what happened to their paintings when they didn't get caught. So I just did a lot of research and mixed it all up and came out with a story that incorporated all of these things. And the story is about a struggling artist who lives in Boston, but she's struggling more than most because she's a pariah in the community and no one is interested in her work. And she is approached by the largest gallery owner in Boston, and he offers her a Faustian bargain and says, if you will forge a painting for me, I will give you a show in my big gallery, and that will catapult your career. So she agrees to do this, but when you start playing around with your devils, you get into trouble, and her trouble starts when the painting is delivered to her studio, and it turns out to be a Degas that was stolen during the Isabella Stewart Gardner heist. And as she starts to explore it, she starts to think that perhaps it, too, is a forgery. And the secret to what happened to this painting lies in Isabella Stewart Gardner's relationship with Edgar Degas in the 1890s. So I got to get all of these things I was interested in and make them into a story.
Oh, that is so fascinating. Well, tell us about this actual heist from 1990. What happened, and how did you fall into writing about it?
Well, it's a huge, huge story in Boston, especially now that they've caught Whitey Bulger. It's, like, really, really big again. It happened in 1990, and two thieves dressed as cops broke into the Gardner Museum, and they very carefully and cautiously and also sloppily went around the museum ripping masterpieces from their frames. They took Vermeers, Rembrandts, Degas, But they also left some very valuable things. They left Michelangelo's, they left Europa hanging on the wall, and they took some kind of silly things like the finial off the top of a Napoleonic flag. And they very casually, they had parked the car right on the side of the building, and they went back and forth and brought these artworks to their car, threw them into this rusted out old Datsun hatchback, and drove away with $500 million worth of artwork, none of which, not a single piece, has been seen in the 23 years since. And it's just a fascinating crime. It doesn't make sense. All kinds of people have been investigated, the mafia, the Irish Republican Army, the Catholic Church, thousands and thousands of individuals, and nothing has been found. So I was just always fascinated by this. And still to this day, the FBI is looking and finding nothing.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? Do you have any ideas what might have happened?
Well, I have some ideas, most of which are don't have very happy endings, so I don't like to talk about it. But it's been a really long time, and if it was, like, say, for example, the mafia who had them, something would have come up. At least one of the pieces would have come up because there would have been too many people involved. My fear is that a couple of young people did it as kind of a lark, and they pulled away, looked in the back seat of their car, and looked at each other and went, "Oh, what do we do now?" And that they might have done something very bad with the paintings. And they will find them, and they will have been kept in good condition somewhere. So that's the hope.
Oh, fascinating, right?
Yeah, but I'm fascinated with it.
Yeah. So before you hit the big time as an author, you were teaching. And you were teaching at Tufts, you were teaching at Northeastern. Tell us about that work and how it subsidized your writing career.
Well, it subsidized it directly because I sure wasn't making any money on my writing career. And the other person who subsidized it, I tell my students all the time that you don't need a room of your own. What you need is a working spouse with benefits. So that's what really subsidized my writing. But I love to teach. I always have. And I taught sociology at Tufts. I actually have a PhD in sociology because that's what all novelists need, PhD in sociology. But I did teach there. And then at Northeastern, I was teaching writing. And not only does teaching, particularly teaching writing, give you some financial support, although not much, it working with students' work helps you with your own. Your eye is more critical, and it's easier to see errors in your own work when you're spending a lot of time looking for errors in other people's work.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Has any of your students hit the big time as an author?
Well, no one's hit the big time, but I do have a number of students, not actually from Northeastern, but I used to teach adult ed in a number of places, primarily in Cambridge, Mass., and a number of them have been published. Probably 5 or 6 of my students have been published, so that's very rewarding.
Yeah, no doubt. So now, let's talk a little bit about the process of selling the book. So how did it work for you?
Well, it was very difficult. As I said, I had written 3 books that I couldn't get published, and this was going to be my last one. This was, if this didn't get published, I was going to go on to career number 5 or whatever it might have been. And this book was sent to, I have a wonderful agent in Boston, Ann Collette at the Reese Agency, and she sent it out to pretty much every major publisher in New York, and it was rejected by every single one of them because they said it didn't fit into a genre. And if they didn't know how to sell it to the bookstores, then they couldn't sell it. And they told me if I made it more of a thriller, they'd be interested. If I made it more of women's fiction, if I made it more historical. And I said to Anne, I said, you know what, I am too old for this. This is the book. I really like it. I purposely wrote a book of my heart, not a book, because I was trying to market it. And if we can't sell it, we can't sell it. And she said, no, we're going to keep trying. And she finally got it to the desk of my fabulous editor at Algonquin Books. And they have a completely different business model. The big publishers publish 1,000, 2,000 books a year. Algonquin publishes 25. So they have to get behind every book. And they started marketing this book, 6, 8 months before it even came out. I didn't even know from my previous books that publishers did anything but put you in a catalog before the book came out. And when I first met my editor, I was telling her about all these publishers who said they couldn't publish it because they didn't know what it is. And she just looked at me kind of confused, and she said, what do you mean they don't know what it is? It's a novel. I'm like, yes, it's a novel. And then Algonquin, you know, they wove their magic and they took this book that everybody was afraid they couldn't sell to booksellers and turned it into, you know, a New York Times bestseller. Go figure.
Isn't that fabulous? Overnight, right?
Yeah, that's it. 25 years in the trenches and I'm an overnight success.
So what is it like to be a successful author? You're doing tours, people know you. What kind of response are you getting?
It's amazing. This was the dream that I had since I was a little girl, to write novels and be successful at it. I had some very minimal success with my previous books, and then I had kind of given up on the hope that this would ever happen. I mean, I saw it for myself, and I saw it with all my friends that, you know, it's like the J.K. Rowling story that's in the news now, that she published the book and not under her name, under an unknown name, and it got a couple of good reviews, and it was languishing until she announced that she was the author, and then it hit number one on Amazon within an hour. And that's the power of name. And this is what happens. It doesn't have all that much to do with the quality of the book. Her book was the same when it was written by Robert, whatever his name was. It's the same book. Nobody was buying it. It's J.K. Rowling now. They're buying it. And so I know that this is an incredibly difficult process, and I know that there are so many people who write just as well, if not better than I do, who have been working at it for 25 or more years, and it's not happening to them. It's just happening to me right now, and it makes you, it makes you think twice about getting too caught up in, the whole, you're famous thing, which of course I'm not, but that there is a serendipity, a capriciousness, a huge bolt of luck that makes these things come together. So I am just trying to focus on enjoying it and, just being happy every day. And, because, this is my dream that's come true. It may never happen again. I don't know about the next book, but it's happening now, and I'm just loving it.
That's excellent. Is it on audio as well?
Yes, it's audio. It's ebook, hardcover, paperback, large print, hardcover, large print, paperback. They're doing all kinds of different versions.
That's excellent. And that publisher, we're very familiar with them. They published Karen Levitt's book, and it's just beautiful books that you really want to read. They're page turners. Clearly yours is, hers is. Is she a good friend of yours?
Yes, she is. We were just actually on a mini tour together out in Colorado with the director of marketing from Algonquin, and the three of us had a great time. Yeah, her new book is really good.
Yeah, that's what we hear. Absolutely. We're going to have to circle back again. We've written about Carolyn before, so we'll definitely have to do that. So tell us now, okay, so this book process is really tough. It's painstaking. It's emotional. It's highly filled with luck and fraud. So what are some of your tips for our listeners on how to manage this process? First, as an author, managing yourself, and then also, how do you sell it to a publisher?
Well, they take many different qualities, and a lot of them are antithetical to each other. So for the writing part, you need, my best advice is to get your butt in a chair and sit there and allow yourself to write it wrong, because it's not until you write it wrong that you can correct it. The Art Forger, I think, was rewritten, I don't know, at least 20 times. And the secret to good writing, I think, is rewriting. And that's what you need to do. And rewrite it and rewrite it and get some feedback from other writers, from maybe a few people who you were, your mother or not your best friend. People are going to give you some criticism. And when you feel that it's in really good shape, that's when you go out and you find an agent. And you don't necessarily need an agent who comes from a huge agency and has a big name. I would almost advise not to do that, because if you have a smaller agency and a smaller agent, they will spend more time with you. And then you just have to do whatever you can do to help them sell the book. You need to have a tough skin. You can't start freaking out and pulling prima donna stuff when you get rejections. You have to be persistent the same way. Persistence is a quality that you have to have all the way through. You have to be persistent to write it, and then you have to be persistent to withstand the searching for the agent and then the agent searching for the publisher. And if you don't find one and you really want to keep doing this, you have to be persistent enough to write the next book. And then after you do get a publisher and it gets published, you have to go out and promote the book. You have to promote it by going on tour. Fortunately for this book, I'm being sent on tour, and the publisher arranges it and pays for it. But with my previous books, I arranged tours by myself. You have to use social media, which I'm not as good at as I should be. But you need to tweet and Facebook and get your name out there. You need to do blog tours, and you need to be a partner in the selling of the book with the publisher. Unfortunately, most publishers aren't very good partners, and more frequently this role is falling, you know, to a greater and greater extent on the author's shoulders, and it's important to do, and it's tough. So these are all, you know, the ability to sit in a chair and just keep going, and then the ability to stand up in front of people at a bookstore and be entertaining are not necessarily traits you're going to often find in the same person. And it's the same thing to be able to write a book that's thoughtful and has to do with, you know, emotions and the human condition. You need to be very sensitive. On the other hand, you also need to have a really, really thick skin in order to be able to really pursue this to the end, to getting it published.
It is.
I hope I didn't depress people.
No, but is it worth it? Is it worth that anxiety and knowing that you may fail?
Are you kidding me? It's worth anything. You know, if you had asked me that question 2 years ago, maybe I would have answered it differently. I think that if you are driven to write, you're driven to write. And I think you need that. I mean, there's so many things that you need, but that has to be the primary one. You have to get high on writing. And you have to recognize that getting high doesn't happen all that often, that most of the time you're sitting there, you know, there is just a lot. You know, people like this image of the writer just sitting there and then, you know, channeling characters and things like that. That very rarely happens. Most of the time you have to do the hard work, and then every once in a while you break into that zone, and 3 or 4 hours goes by, and you don't even know that they have gone by because you are so deep into your story and you come out of that and it's such a high. I think it must be like heroin, you know. And I one of my theories is that that's one of the reasons that we do it, is in search of that high. That's the positive reinforcement.
Excellent. So are you working on a new book?
Yes, I am. I've been working on it for a couple of years, and it's also about art, but it's about the abstract expressionists, Jackson Pollock, Lee Krasner, Mark Rothko, Willem de Kooning, and they were all working for the WPA very early on in their careers in the late 1930s, so it's most of the book is set then, and, you know, all of these people, they're wild and crazy and young and jumping in and out of each other's beds and partying and creating this absolutely new American school of art, abstract expressionism. And my main character is one of them. She's fictional. And she is trying to get her French Jewish family out of France before the war begins. And she gets very involved in the politics of the time, which is really interesting, as well as the art of the time, and makes enemies of Charles Lindbergh and Joe Kennedy and is befriended by Eleanor Roosevelt. And I'm having a really good time with this really merging of real characters and fictional characters and creating a world that is like that world but not really is that world. So I'm having a good time with it.
Oh, excellent. Does it have a working title?
Yeah, the working title is Montage, but my editor already told me that that's not going to be the title.
All right. When will it be out?
Well, it would have been out earlier if my editor had not come up with this new idea, which is probably going to take me another 9 months to institute. I'm guessing 2015. Algonquin is really good. They do not push you to get a book out. They help you and prod you to write the best book that you can write, and then they put it out, which I greatly admire, respect, and am very happy for, because that's not how a lot of publishers are.
Oh, isn't that excellent? So it's the art of the book as opposed to the business of it. I think that's great.
In many ways. I mean, you can't ignore the business, and they don't. But they are more focused on the book and the author as entities in and of themselves rather than just products.
Excellent. Well, we can't wait to talk to you when this next book comes out, and we thank you very much for being here today.
You are very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Excellent. We are talking to Barbara Shapiro, author of The Art Forger, and you are listening to the Incandescent Radio Network. We thank you very much for your time, and we will talk to you soon.
That's it for today's episode of The ABCs, Authors Between the Covers, hosted by journalist and publisher Hope Katz Gibbs, author of Truly Amazing Women Who Are Changing the World and PR Rules, The Playbook. Be sure to check back next week on the Incandescent Radio Network for another interview with a successful author who is happy to share their story. Here's to writing your heart out and keeping your dreams alive. Thanks so much for listening.